Hello, everybody. Welcome to my fourth podcast ever. I'm Simca Fisher, as you know very well by this point, and I have my long-expected, long-awaited guest. It is the creative genius and the creator behind the Eye of the Tiber, the Catholic world's funniest satirical and pretty much only satirical website, S.C. Neum. S.C. Neum, thank you so, so very much for coming to my podcast. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I wouldn't say that I'm the only satirical website out there. I'm sure there's a few others that people know.
I can't think of one that's I know people will make a stab at it, but you're the one that makes me laugh every time. I'll tell you that.
Right.
Now everybody's gonna be mad at me.
Well, thank you, and we do get a lot of comments about my competition.
Yeah,
with the National Catholic Reporter.
Yes.
So
the only intentionally satirical newspaper out there. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and I don't care what side you go on, sort of the politics in the Vatican, but there's a lot of satire coming out of there. There's a lot of humor coming out of there.
Let's start with that. That's something that I'm curious about. I feel that Catholicism is like inherently a humorous and satirical religion. And I don't know if I'm just making that up or if I just want it to be, or if there's actually something to that. Do you think there's what do you think?
No, absolutely. I think any religion, I think any belief, any political figure, if you can't laugh at it, there's something very dangerous and very, there's something unhinged there. And I know that somebody quoted, somebody said that, some genius said that somewhere, and I'm forgetting who, but so when you look at the church, it is something to laugh about, and it's to me, I always look at the church as we are a family. Mm-hmm. And we have people who believe this and people who believe that, but in the end we can all sit down, and we should all be able to sit down and sort of laugh at our family, our dysfunctional family.
It's very dysfunctional.
It's right? It's always the
peaks and valleys. I think we're in a peak.
It's
right
always
now.
The grumpy. I'm sorry.
I'm thinking we're in sort of peak dysfunctionality at the moment, looking at the headlines.
We are. We're at peak, and there's, you know, there's always that one. There's the grumpy uncle. Mm-hmm. Who shows up once every like third Christmas and just riles everybody up, and everybody's like, oh, that's why he's never invited, or, you know, thank goodness he never comes to these things.
But, yeah, and you do a very good job.
And those are the people who can't laugh.
Yeah. So do you get, and I know that you get in your, I mean, it says right on your website, this is a satirical newsletter. I think it even says it in all capital letters that it is satire. But nevertheless, you get a lot of comments from people who don't understand that it's satire, or who they know that it's supposed to be satire, but it's not funny. I wonder, does it ever discourage you? Does it ever bother you?
Well, no. What discourages me is when everybody understands that it's a joke and it's satire.
Uh-huh.
The thing that keeps me going is when people don't get it. And then they have to be told, somebody will write out sigh, or, you know. that really makes me happy, because what happens then is then people have to sort of dig, and, you know, if they care enough, to sort of care enough about my writing, as you know, but to sort of dig in, okay, I don't get the context of why he's writing what he's writing.
Right.
I will Google this person or this person that I mentioned and see the real story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's never discouraging. Yeah. It's quite the opposite. It lifts me up. Other things that lift me up, in case you're wondering, are the basically weekly emails that I get from random people telling me that they're praying for my soul so that I don't
isn't that nice?
Go to hell.
It's so nice of them. It's so sweet. I always appreciate that so much. All these
strangers. There are a lot of people out there that are not praying for my soul, and I really appreciate it. Yes, absolutely.
Back at you, pal. I am your spirit.
I am a devil to some people. You are a devil to some people.
Yeah. Boy, I tell him.
I won't mention National Catholic Register. where you were excommunicated from.
thrown out into the darkness. I gnash my teeth every single night. I brush my teeth, and then I gnash my teeth with the helmet.
And I appreciate you having a sense of humor about that, because I know that's got to be shocking.
When I saw the article that you wrote, presumably you're the one who wrote it, that two writers from the National Catholic Register fired under suspicion of having an opinion. I think that was how you put it. It saved my whole day, because I was feeling low. Nobody wants to be fired, you know. That is an example of humor, really. Not to be too pedantic about it, but it's certainly, it's a real work of mercy sometimes. Well, humor is a work of mercy, especially when you're talking about religious things. Let me ask you, do you have guidelines for yourself, though? Because I know that, I mean, like, for instance, The Onion does, I suspect that The Onion has at least one Catholic on staff, because they seem to have some kind of information, and they seem to understand some of the current things in Catholic headlines going on, but they're not Catholic, and they do cross the line, and they get sacrilegious, or at least very, very irreverent sometimes. So do you have objective guidelines for yourself? There's some things that you won't joke about, or some things that you won't say?
The only things I won't make fun of, I won't make fun of, like the Trinity, or I won't, the Holy Spirit. There are certain, I won't, Mary. Yeah. I've made a joke about a statue of Mary that happened to be in the Los Angeles Cathedral, which I think is hideous, which looks sort of like a Jedi.
I've seen that one.
Yeah, and it's about the statue of Mary wondering why everyone's laughing at it. So I'll make fun of the statue, but I won't make fun of Mary. Right. Typically, I just like to make fun of people and situations that we all encounter. Mm-hmm. So people that we all know, so like Cardinal Burke, the Pope, organizations like the Society of St. Pius X and the Fifth and Pope Michael. I prefer to just stick to Catholic quote celebrities and organizations.
Yep. Although I'm looking at a headline, I don't think I have it in front of me, but it was something about, you did have a recent headline about Christ refusing to clarify certain obscure, certain vague passages of Scripture after all these, it's true, he does refuse to clarify.
Right, and so there are... You know, if you want to talk about, you mentioned earlier, does this thing sort of bother you when people don't get it? I'll tell you that, those never bother me. What does bother me is when I say something that defends Pope Francis, and I have all the, Francis haters sort of bombard me or write, like, what are you talking about? How can you defend this? Yeah. He has to ask. Or the dubia and so on and so forth. And then I'll come out and I'll do something sort of quote anti-Francis.
Right, right.
And the other side will come out.
Right, right.
Sort of Francis. Yeah, this whole side's.
Do you keep a tally to make sure that you're.
Very equal opportunity.
Yeah. I was wondering if you do that, if you keep track of it and make sure that you're not like favoring one side or the other or, bashing one side or the other.
No, recently somebody pointed out, and it's very true. Recently, I've been making fun of Pope Francis a little more than I used to. So naturally you think, all right, maybe I do gotta sort of stick one up for him, sort of help him out a little bit. But I really don't. I don't have a little. Counter with one for him, one against him, one against him.
Do people tell you that you have a slant, though? I mean, do people say that you're especially conservative or especially progressive?
Not typically, verbally, just blatantly, hey, you lean this way or that way.
Yeah.
But you can see typically by the comments, which are... I can tell now who my reader is. I know after a few years.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I was like, I'm not sure who is going to be reading my site. I'm just going to throw stuff out there and just see what sticks. Yep. But it seems like people bear it. Some people just get really frustrated at certain issues. He's doing this too much, and I'm going to unfollow, and they'll mention it, or they'll email me, I'm unfollowing you.
That stings.
But you can't. If I focus on that thing, I'm just going to go nuts.
Yeah, sure. Well, what was the first article that you ever wrote that you threw out there to see how it would land?
I believe that I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact headline, but it was something about the Society of St. Pius X suspending or excommunicating a bishop for ordaining 4 more bishops without SSPX approval.
Oh.
I believe that was it. But if that wasn't the first one, that was really early on.
I remember it took a while for people to catch on that it was satire because people saw it and it was, you came out and you had the logo and everything and people were like, what? Like nobody knew, like who? And you took forever to put your name out there too.
Two of my first bloggers soon started to, bloggers that I had read. Mm-hmm. That I read religiously started reposting my articles. Two of the first that ever did that, and I don't know if you could find two people more sort of, I don't want to say it the wrong way, but just with different views on the church or at least maybe liturgy, but was Mark Shea.
Yep.
Who I was a fan of, and Father Z.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, right? Can you get two more?
Right, exactly. Wow. Mean,
and so when I saw that both of them were posting my articles, that's when I was like, okay, I'm
doing it right.
Right. I'm doing it right, which basically means I'm not overthinking it.
Right,
if I think something's funny, I'm posting it.
Yeah. Well, what happens when you go through a dry spell? I mean, everybody goes through a dry spell sometimes. What happens if you're, you sit down and think, all right, be funny, ready, funny, like, how do you get out of that?
Well, I actually typically don't, I never set down a specific time of the day or any time of the day or week trying to think of articles.
Yeah.
It never happens. They just sort of come to me either by when I'm just driving or I'm having whiskey or I'm at mass, unfortunately.
That was one of my questions.
That's silly.
Yeah.
if a big guy, big sweaty guy leans back while I'm kneeling and hits me in the back of the head. Oh, there's an article. Perfect.
Because that's happened to everybody. So you're having one of those universal experiences.
I have a group of friends, a few friends that I consider funny, and I'll typically send out article ideas to them, and they're pretty frank and brutal with me. Like,
that's invaluable.
Just
yep.
Shut down the website right now. and sometimes they throw articles at me. Hey, have you done this? Try this.
Yeah. So, you write most of them yourself, though.
I would say 95% of the articles are mine.
Yeah.
Which, so you can count about if 95% of them are mine, then 5% of the articles are good.
Oh, now. So. And how often do you actually post, though? I mean, your website is, it's constantly, you don't just have one up at a time now. It's like laid out like a newspaper page now, I've noticed.
Right. Well, what it does, the website layout now is sort of so it rotates. So every time you refresh, you get a new fresh article.
Right.
In the past, it's changed in the past, really, because I don't have a set schedule or a team dedicated people. I will post once, and then if I think of something in 3 days, I'll post another.
Yeah.
Typically, I've been trying to post at least 5 times a week. I've been trying to make sure it's pretty consistent Monday through Friday.
That is a pretty hot schedule there. And I mean, this is not obviously your day job. This is not what you're doing to support yourself and your family, I imagine.
That is correct.
That is correct.
The new book that I published, as well as sort of advertising, is nice, but it's not exactly paying rent. So
yeah, right.
I have to, you know, things come up during the workday, and I'll have to make a little note of it, like, yeah, that has potential.
Right, and get back to it and write later.
I'll work it out.
Before I forget, let me ask you, what is the best place that people can buy a book so that you'll get the most advantage out of it? Where would you like people to shop for it?
Well, thank you. That would be, you can either go to Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's on hardback, paperback now. So Amazon, I have the Tiber, the book. Because I'm so creative, and that's what I came up with.
Yep. It works. Search engine optimization.
Or you can go straight to my publisher. That's Enroute. That's Enroute, E-N space R-O-U-T-E. So you can go to them as well to purchase the book.
All right. Now let me ask you. So you're married, and you have a child, at least one child. Am I right?
Yes.
So do they think you're funny? Your family, or do they just
no? I think I'm awful. One of them does, and that's my son, who's one and a half. So I throw him up in the air, and he thinks I'm hilarious because I throw him up and down.
Yep.
My wife doesn't think I'm funny at all. She thinks I'm like 100% dad jokes. She thinks this site is all dad jokes. Which is really sad.
That's but awesome.
What am I? She did a blurb for the back of the book, and hers was just one of the best doorstops I've ever had. So that's what she thinks of my writing and my humor.
I guess it's necessary to have that so you don't get too ahead of yourself. Would you like to have like a more, you know, like you said, like a staff of writers or something like that? Is that something that you would go for if you could, or would you rather just keep it like as it is?
I don't know. You know, so Catholicism is such a, I know there's a billion of us, right? But Catholicism itself is a niche, and then let's try to, how do I do this without judging people?
I'll go for it. This is a safe space.
Okay, yeah. Perfect. Well, so that's, Catholicism is such a niche market to begin with, mm-hmm. And then if you move into satire, that has typically the people who follow are people who follow the church.
Mm-hmm.
Follow what's going on, the news, they read the blogs, they read the newspapers.
Right.
So and that makes it even more niche. So I don't think a team of writers would actually ever, it would help out, but I'm not sure one of my goals is, after potentially remaking my site, redoing the site, is having a little more interaction with different Catholic writers.
Yeah.
Just your man off the street, people who read the site will be able to jump on, send me something, and I can post it up there for everybody to see.
Yeah.
So I'd like to have a little more interplay with instead of just me having to do everything.
Yeah, that would be nice, because there's so many witty people out there, and it all gets wasted on, you know, Facebook and Twitter, and then it just evaporates in 30 seconds, or sometimes it never evaporates when you want it to. But
you're exactly right, and if you look at the com box in any, if you look at any of the com boxes in most of the articles, you just have these people who, with just sheer brilliance, just these little comments that are absolutely beautiful. And I say, God, I should have thought of that, and I could have thrown it in there. So I want to sort of give these people an opportunity, because I do believe satire is important. I believe all religions should really have a or more than one satire site to sort of spread the word of God, and just to remind everybody, just relax. And
yes. Just relax, take it easy.
Relax.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. In that vein, I just wanted to, I realize, you know, I'm talking to a great satirist here, and I haven't actually shared any of your work so far. So just in case, on the odd chance that one of our listeners is unfortunately not familiar with Eye of the Tiber yet, I wanted to read a few of my particular favorite headlines. This is one that gets me every single time. This is Thomas Aquinas.
I'm laughing,
I know, I always laugh at
because you say something's funny that I wrote, but go ahead.
It It's a good feeling. Thomas Aquinas College offering 2-year program in the pretty good books.
I think I listed some of those books down there too. I forget what those were.
But yeah, let's see. Well, it says Thomas Aquinas College describes their new program syllabus as composed exclusively of the just barely adequate texts that have, for good or for ill, kind of sort of animated, for lack of a better word, Western civilization. The announcement comes just days after the University of Notre Dame announced the continuation of their mediocre books program, which includes books such as Heaven is for Real, as well as Judy Blume's theological treatise, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Oh, I'm so hilarious.
Brilliant.
I'm so amazing.
And I have to say, your articles are short, and I appreciate that so much because I have no attention span. And if you can't get the joke out within, you know, 400 words or whatever it is, I admire that because I know how hard it is to write something short. So A1 for that. Here's another one of my favorites. I think this is one of the first ones that I shared. Dissident legionary priest parts his hair in the middle.
that's one of the oldies. That's one of the first ones.
That was
ones.
Yeah. Yes, and I saw that was one that I saw, and I was not 100% sure that it was satire actually. because it's the Legion, and you don't. Let's see. Speaking to an assembly of Legionary of Christ seminarians this week, communications director for the Legionaries, Jim Fair, expressed outrage over the most recent scandal to hit the fragile religious congregation when just last week, Legionary priest Ronald McKellen was caught on tape with his hair parted down the middle, a clear violation of the rules and regulations of the congregation. It's an outrage! It is a scandal! 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 Fair screamed to reporters. Gathered late yesterday, it's a sign of the times. I cannot say. Is it a sign of the end? I dare not say.
That's old. That's like 5 years.
Oh my gosh, that's brilliant, though.
That's like 5 years.
The Massiel thing was one thing, one seminarian said with tears in his eyes, but this is too much. So do you do you ever write something and somebody will tell you, whoa, too soon, dude, you know, because that's, you know, that's a tender subject there.
That was a very tender subject. I don't know what I was thinking there. There's only been a couple. I did one article about an organization, and the priest actually called and contacted me and asked me kindly. He said, you know, most of our, I basically had mentioned something about them going out of business because they were doing something.
Yeah.
I think it was that they were coming out with a non-confrontational translation of the Bible. That was it.
Okay.
And typically I just, if you don't like it, you just don't like it.
Right.
Just deal with it. But he was very genuine, older gentleman. He just said, our viewers are very old and they don't understand this.
Yes.
That this is satire and we've been getting bombarded. Would you mind? And so I did actually, I told him, I'm not going to take it down, but I'll go ahead and change the name to something else.
Yeah, sure. That's a human thing to do. Right, I mean, if you're going to be in the religion business one way or the other, you got to act like a human being, I guess. Yeah. I run into that sometimes. People will say, look, I understand this is a joke, but this person is 10 years older than me, and it's past, you know, there's a cutoff line. There's a generational cutoff line, and it just doesn't translate sometimes.
Basically, anybody, anybody who watches EWTN,
yep.
Right? So I if they're getting, they're going to be confused.
Yeah, because
religiously watches EWTN. No offense if you watch EWTN.
I watched it. I was at a hotel the other day, and my husband turned it on, and we kind of both sat there with our mouths hanging open for a minute, and then we thought, well, I guess we'll watch The Simpsons because this is so
What can we do? I mean, there's so many EWTN articles I can do. It's just, if they're not getting it.
I don't know. It serves a purpose. What are you going to do? I don't know. It's a big church.
And that's something to, absolutely. It serves a purpose. And there are a lot of people out there that do get stuff out of it.
Right.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop walking on eggshells. I'm just going to stop.
Okay.
No more.
Well, let me change. Okay, so we said that it was a big church. We were talking before, and you said that you were born in Iraq, and you are a Chaldean Catholic. Is that correct?
I'm Chaldean, right?
Exactly. Chaldean, right?
In Baghdad. I was born in Baghdad, and my family. I lived there 6 months, so
Much. Don't remember it.
But we came just a little after Saddam was. When after Saddam came over, and we moved to Michigan to Detroit for just a bit before landing in San Diego, where I am now.
Yeah.
And then we have our Chaldean population out here. We have our Chaldean rite. I did spend most of my, actually most of all of my childhood really in a Roman rite church in Holy Trinity Catholic Church at the time.
Uh-huh.
Until I eventually sort of embraced the Chaldean culture and the rite. And, yeah. So I have the experience of periodically still going to a Roman rite and sort of the knowledge and understanding of what the Chaldean rite is.
Which is,
it's a beautiful rite. And unfortunately, it's in a lot of danger right now because of what's happening, and a lot of people are fleeing the homeland. They're fleeing Baghdad, and when you look at places like Detroit, and which has, I believe, more Chaldeans than Baghdad itself, or the villages around it, it's sad. It's really sad state.
Yeah, and this is something that, but you're raising your children in this, right? And do you feel that it's something that people will be able to maybe, keep alive as a transplant in the United States?
Absolutely. And we have some great bishops. We have some amazing priests. My parish alone has about 10 priests.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
So and if you talk about Detroit, it's amazing how many there are there. I think it's very important to keep up. We actually are right. We speak Chaldean. So we speak or Aramaic,
really?
The language of Christ. So
really?
That is something very special. So when you do come to the, I always invite friends.
Can you say a prayer in Aramaic? Can you say something so
no.
that we can hear?
No.
A little something.
I'll tell you why. Because my family, so you have people, the Chaldeans who lived in the villages, in the Chaldean villages, above and around Baghdad. Just north of Baghdad, and then you had those who lived in Baghdad itself. My family and my father and his father and my mother and her mother and father, they all lived in Baghdad. Most of those spoke Arabic.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong about some of this. Somebody's going to call in.
Nobody's going to call in.
Perfect, so who cares? All of them. So we spoke Arabic.
Uh-huh.
And you'll find Aramaic spoken more typically in the northern regions, in the Chaldean villages. But I will say this, because I'm surrounded by Chaldeans so much, and Aramaic so much, that the accents in the Passion of the Christ are not very good.
Oh.
I'll just say that. It's not very good.
Well, I thought the same thing myself, but I didn't want to be rude about it. So.
Actually, one of our priests did the translation for the movie.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so.
Is it a liturgical language only, though, or do people still speak Aramaic? I don't know anything about this.
People speak it. You go to a local coffee shop, and there are people speaking Aramaic. Now, the Aramaic that they're speaking is more modern.
Sure.
Where liturgical it's different.
Yeah.
Typically, you'll understand both of them. As far as I know, you'll understand both, but it's different. It's enough of a difference where you'd have to do a little study.
Okay. Yep. that makes sense. Oh, but you got to say something. You can't leave us hanging like this. Say, say something.
All I know is curse words that I learned from friends, and I can't use those right now.
Actually, I mean, well, I don't want to be pushy or anything, but the rest of the podcasts have sort of gone in that direction. So, but you know, we all have our reputations to uphold here, so I won't. Oh my goodness, I can't believe it's been a half hour already. This time has just completely flown by.
Has it already?
Yeah, it really has.
My whiskey's only halfway through. Aww. I haven't even made fun of you enough for National Catholic Register.
Well, I have okay. almost completely finished my gin, but it's later here than it is there.
We'll do a part two, and we'll do it halfway into our drinks.
Okay. And then we'll see who can speak Aramaic then. We'll see about that. Oh, thank you so much. S.C. Naum.
S.C. Naum. I don't know. Yay!
Thank you so much for coming on. It was a true pleasure.
It's been
I really enjoyed it. Absolute
pleasure.
And part two coming at some point. Absolutely. All right. Take care. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks so much. God bless. Take care, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
Cheers.